You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 32 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be looking back at the victories over Fulham and Milan as Berbatov and Rooney take centre stage. Red Cafe member Gaps is next in line on the CAF countdown, and Goal.com UK's Neil Jones joins us on the line to look ahead to Liverpool on Sunday.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, hello and welcome to episode 32 now of the RedCafe.net podcast. It's me, Stephen Darwin, and yes, I'm joined by Dan and Dov. Guys, how are you this week?
Not bad, thanks, Steve. Enjoyed the game on Sunday. Good result. How about you?
Yeah, all good. Enjoyed the game as well, and you were actually there, Dan. Good atmosphere.
Well, it was a lunchtime kickoff. I don't think the atmosphere is always very good on a lunchtime kickoff, but as we got a few more goals, all the Glazer protests were coming out in force. A few banners were unfurled behind me and banging on the notice boards as well. So it was good. It cranks up a little bit towards the end. But it was a good game to watch.
Great stuff. Dov, how are you doing this week?
Yeah, I'm not bad. A little bit tired. But it was a good weekend. I had a good, exciting football weekend. Well, Sunday was perfect. I couldn't think of anything better. Although I did go and see some Scottish Cup on Saturday, which slitting my wrists would have been more entertaining, I think.
Oh dear. Right, guys, well, we'll kick off by discussing the Fulham game, the 3-0 victory that Dan was just talking about. And, well, we'll start with the Rooney-Berbatov combination, Dan. Deadly, wasn't it?
Again, yeah, Berbatov, good performance. I think he got a man of the match, which was fully deserved as well. And I'm glad he got his goal at the end as well, because, I mean, his performance deserved it. He missed a few chances, especially in the first half, a header from Nani's cross, which went over the top. But, I mean, his general all-round play, he was even putting a few tackles in and things like that. And his general gameplay, it seems to have gone up a level the last five or six games. And it's great to see. And, you know, a lot of people said that him and Rooney don't seem to have a decent partnership. But, like, you know, the last five or six games, it's been pretty decent between the two of them.
Dov, you must be taken to Berbatov now. We've had a couple of messages, one from Vishnu Shari on the Facebook group, and an email as well from Stuart Holden, just sort of saying you must now be sort of warming to Berbatov. He's been absolutely superb the last couple of games.
I'm not going to deny that he hasn't. He's played very, very well. I just think he's on form, and he's a good player. I've never said he's not a good player. He is a good player. I just don't think he's top class. If you look at the teams, I'm gonna find a way to criticise him, Dan, just for you. If you look at the teams he's played against, I mean, he's played what the last say five or six games. You say he's been really, really like he's played well. Like, who's he played? Fulham, Wolves, Aston Villa.
Well, I mean,
you're really talking about like what happened like, maybe the weekend, maybe something different. But what happens when you play Chelsea or Barcelona or somebody like that, a big team? He's still got lots to prove, but he's going the right way about it. I'm going to give him his dues because he was fantastic on Saturday.
Yeah, but last season, I mean, you know, when we went to win the league, I mean, he scored a vital goal at Bolton. You know, not the best team in the world. I mean, he set up Tevez for a goal at Stoke, I remember. He scored a few important goals, and it's not always the big teams you need to win against, as other teams have proved in the past by slipping up against the little teams. So, I mean, I think he's a vital player. I don't know where you're coming from, really. I think he's a fantastic footballer, and he's starting to show up now as well.
You can see Dov's point though. I mean, when he scores a goal or does something absolutely fantastic in a game against a massive side, like on the weekend when we play Liverpool, if he does turn on the style, then I'm sure Dov will turn around and say, hands up, he was fantastic against a strong team.
Well, to be fair, I mean, he doesn't really play in the big games, does he? Because we don't play 4-4-2 in them, so I think it's hard to.
So he's expendable then?
Well, only because they don't want to be too open in the big game. You know, if you play three in midfield or, you know, you're five in midfield, you can't obviously in the form that Rooney's in, you can't leave him out, can you? So I think that's sort of like not helped. But I mean, in the games he has played, I mean, I think he's been decent. And he proved at Wolves the other week that he can lead the line on his own, and he can also play in a 4-4-2 as well. So he brings us vital options, which, you know, a lot of teams don't have.
Definitely.
And I think in his debut against Liverpool, Dov, if you remember at Anfield, he set up a goal for Tevez. That's arguably a big game. All right, we went on to lose it. That's a big game though. I think he scored at Chelsea last year. If I'm not, I stand me corrected if I am wrong, but I think he scored against Chelsea last year. So that's two teams that you can, you know.
But the thing is, Danny, he's been on about a 5 or 6 game run. This is the most impressive he's ever been since he moved here. I don't know what it is. Actually, like, it seems like something has changed in his attitude, just from his body language in the last couple of weeks. And like, I think a lot of people may be saying maybe he's the tag of a £30 million player was weighing him down. Maybe that's lifted. Maybe he's seen Rooney's on form. So he sort of thought, if I'm going to get in this team, I need to start working a bit harder. Because I mean, for the second goal, I think we were discussing it earlier on. How did he do that? He actually ran past two players.
I mean, he keeps getting in the positions as well, which I've noticed a lot last few weeks. He's having chances, which, you know, previously in the season he wasn't really like you say, he wasn't bursting to get into the box and to help people. But now he seems a lot more prepared to. I don't know, to sacrifice himself and make it happen for other players as well.
Yeah, it's like his
move that I find fascinating. He never stands still, really, and he's a little bit.
Dan, did you just say that Berbatov never stands still?
Never stands still. He never chases around, you know, fully. But he's always on the move. He's always occupying space, isn't he? He's always in there, ready to receive the ball. There's not a lot of times when our midfield get it and Berbatov's marked. He's always dropping deep. He'll, you know, that's why him and Rooney work well together, because I think Berbatov tends to look for a lot more space, whereas Rooney will want to, you know, to be on the end of chances this season. And I think it's a good partnership.
Dan, talking about Rooney and Berbatov working well together, I mean, with Liverpool in mind, we've had a Facebook message from Safi and Ben Zaire, and also an email as well on the same subject from Sonak Bose. I hope I've pronounced that right. Yeah, the system for Liverpool, I mean, would you go, you talked about it earlier, that Ferguson's had a tendency to go with that 4-5-1 shape with Rooney up front on his own, but it worked so well, the 4-4-2, didn't it, against Fulham? So would you sort of carry on where you left off there and play the 4-4-2, or do you think he might change it again because he's playing what you could class as potentially a stronger team?
Well, they're not. I disagree with that. They're not a stronger team, and I think we should be going out there, like I say every week, you know, 4-4-2 at home. You know, we're going after a title here. We're not like going after fourth place, and I think we need to be, you know, getting 3 points. And I think that, you know, 4-4-2 is the best way to go about it. Liverpool aren't on a brilliant one. I know they won tonight, but I mean, they're not on a brilliant run, are they? They lost against Lille and they lost the previous game as well. So I think they're there for the taking. We need a bit of, I don't know, maybe a bit of revenge for last season. And I think that Liverpool will come to Old Trafford thinking that if they beat us, that could be us out of the title race, and we don't want that to happen, especially with Liverpool. So I think we should definitely go out for the attack. Fergie always says that he likes attacking football and stuff. He should go and prove it. Berbatov and Rooney up front.
I think you're right, Dan. I think he's going to struggle to drop Berbatov now, certainly. But Ji-Sung Park, Dov, playing really well at the moment, isn't he? And sort of as an attacking midfielder as well, as opposed to an out-and-out wide player. AskerBob91, we've had a Facebook message from them. And Park, I mean, is it a sign of things to come that he's been playing as an attacking midfielder, or do you just think it's something that Ferguson's trying, maybe to compensate for injuries and lack of personnel?
I just think he does a really good job. Like, the game in question when he played it was against Milan, and basically put him on Pirlo and nullified any threat that Andrea Pirlo had in that game. And then he came on against Fulham at the weekend in place of Valencia and was brilliant. Obviously got a, sort of made Berbatov's goal. His crossing was fantastic, and he's running and he's industry, and Dan was talking about team play. He's one player who, you know, will give everything for the team, and he's in the same form as the form he was sort of latter stages when he was playing at PSV, just before we signed him. He's in that kind of form, and I was honestly surprised he never started the game at the weekend as well, after the performance on Wednesday, because he was probably, but it was the best, our best player in the Champions League.
He's a big game player now, isn't he? He's resting him up.
Yeah, I think, I mean, lads, I think he'll play on Sunday against Liverpool. Just going back to your point there, Dov, about, you know, sitting on Pirlo. Do you reckon Ferguson used the same sort of tactic against Gerrard? I mean, obviously, it might not be Park because Gerrard plays a lot higher up the pitch, doesn't he, than what Pirlo does. But do you think someone like, I don't know, Darren Fletcher might be able to do a similar job? Because obviously, you want to cut off the supply to Torres, don't you? He's obviously a good striker and he'll score goals. And Gerrard's possibly the only one, really, who'll look to link up with him.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, they're not on form. That's the thing. Like, Gerrard's not on form, but I think he'll maybe look to, like, Fletcher. Maybe not put him on him as such, like, as in stick to him, but keep an eye on him. Like, how, like, just make sure that whenever he gets the ball, get on him instead of following him around the park, something like that. But I think it depends how it goes. You're saying go out in a 4-4-2, but I think if he's going to do something like that, it would
play. Yeah, you have to play a three.
Play three in the middle. So. It depends how you want to go. Personally, I would go with the three in the middle, and then maybe bring, like, I wouldn't start Berbers off myself, and then bring him on later. But that's just me.
Okay, we've had an email from Mark Hughes, Household United name. he talks about a physicality that he's noticed in our side, and he thinks sort of Ferguson's looking to build a squad having a physical presence. He's noticed with the signings as well reflect that. I mean, you've got Mamie Diouf's come in. He's quite well built, athletic player, Valencia as well, and he's noticed as well the likes of Nani, Berbatov, they've gone away and sort of worked on their strength, he thinks. It's a good point to make, and also with Zoran Tosic, he's noted that maybe Tosic isn't playing as much, and he's obviously subsequently gone out on loan because of that lack of physical presence, and he's maybe sent him away to bulk up a bit, and then maybe when he has, he could introduce him into the side. Dov, is that something you've noticed with the sort of physicality? The team?
I noticed, like, the one player that he never mentioned, I noticed that was Raphael. I just noticed he just suddenly, like, after like 2 or 3 weeks, he was massive. Sort of upper body, like shoulders and his chest and things. I couldn't believe it. He's like 18, 19 years old and he's huge. But I can see what he's saying with regards to, I mean, if you compare it with, say, Chelsea have got a number of players who are really, really a big physical presence. Obviously, you've got Didier Drogba, Michael Ballack, Essien, Alex. They're all big, big, big physical players. And if we're going to compete with players or teams that have got physical presences like that, then we need to have some of our own. I mean, if you, like, Darren Fletcher's not exactly a physical presence, neither is Ji-Sun Park. Obviously, Nani was always quite slight as well. So maybe he's trying to compensate a bit for that to give us a bit of, obviously, technical abilities, pace, speed as well, and then add some physicality into the side as well, which I think I would say we're probably lacking in the centre of the park or for one.
Welbeck's quite a big lad, but he's not, I wouldn't say he's not got enough upper body strength yet, has he? Obviously, he's been loaned out and he's gone the same way as Tosic as well, but I mean, I think that Ferguson, he probably has realised, like Dov say, you know, Chelsea are, you know, they are a powerful team. There's no two ways about that. And I think, you know, I kind of agree with Dov there. The fact that we don't, the last few years we've never really had anyone who stands out to be a proper, like, robust midfielder or anything like that. So I think that it's just a good idea, and, you know, hopefully we'll be able to match Chelsea and then obviously kick on.
So it's a hard league as well, remember, Dan. It's like, well, yeah. It's like you're playing in the Premier League, it's a hard league, and you're playing against teams like maybe Stoke, where, like, every single player's about 6'5" and 3 feet wide and things like that. So you've got Zoran Tosic going up against somebody like that. I mean, it doesn't matter how good he is, he's probably going to come out second best most of the time.
Before we move on to review the fantastic Champions League win over Milan, guys, we'll have a little look at the Premier League run-in. Barry Leeming has emailed us from Denmark, and he's just asked us to have a little look at the games we've got left and sort of compare that to Arsenal and Chelsea, and what sort of points total we think we can come out with at the end of it. Ferguson, I believe, predicted we can get 24 points from our remaining games, and Barry suggested that he thinks we can afford one draw, but he believes the Chelsea game is a must win. I'd go along with that. I think the Chelsea game is a must-win. If we lose that, or potentially draw that, it could upset the apple cart, if you like, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, looking at the fixtures as well, I mean, Chelsea have got Liverpool away, second last game of the season, which But I don't know, do you think Liverpool would throw that game so we didn't win 19 titles?
No.
Could do it on a sly, you know. They could maybe play a second string side and say that they had lots of injuries or something.
Oh,
like
imagine
that.
The uproar to that.
No, I mean, in terms of fixtures, I mean, I think that obviously it's obvious, you know, biggest games against Chelsea, isn't it? And we've got, we've got Bolton away from home, which is still a tricky game. That's on the 27th of March as well. So I mean, there's not a lot of games there that we could say are guaranteed points. You know, the next week or so is pretty much vital.
I think a lot of people are saying Arsenal have probably got the easier running. Like, the only really tough game or tough couple of games they've got is Tottenham away and City at home. And I think if Tottenham get to the FA Cup semi-finals, then that fixture will get rearranged for second last game. So Arsenal, Tottenham's second last game as well. So right. It could be interesting. Obviously, like if everybody's still in the running, where you've got like Chelsea, Liverpool, Arsenal, Tottenham, and then like we've got Sunderland away. Second last,
and then we've got Stoke at home as well in the last game of the season. I'm glad we're at home for it, because there's a lot of seasons. I remember when we played West Ham away.
'95.
Yeah, Andy Cole missed like two hatfuls worth of chances, and obviously Blackburn went on to win it. But you know, there's a lot of tough fixtures there: City away, Blackburn away, one after each other. So that'll be we've got a difficult running, I think.
I think you could literally pull one of the three teams out of the hat at the moment, couldn't you, and say they're going to win the title. I think it's that close a thing that anything really could happen.
I think it might depend on how far one of the teams or two of the teams go in the Champions League, because I mean, if you have sort of like, I think Chelsea would maybe rather win the Champions League than winning the Premier League, because they've not won it before, something like that. And then I don't know, seeing how the fixtures play out as well, I think that might have a big bearing on who wins the league. And if somebody goes out in the quarterfinals, then they've just got one a game every weekend, so that'd be easier for them.
Well, looking at United's fixtures, though, I think we'll beat Liverpool this weekend, and I think we'll beat Bolton, so that's 6 points. Chelsea, I think, you know, we're at home, aren't we? So I think there's no reason why we shouldn't win that game. I'm being optimistic here for once. We've got Blackburn now. Blackburn's one of them games where they always seem to do really well against United, especially at Ewood Park. They always seem to put up a good fight. So I'm going to actually go for a draw there. I think we'll then have to beat City, which would give us 13. Is that right? Yeah. And then Tottenham at home. That should be fair enough. Pretty straightforward, I reckon. Sunderland away. Yeah. So I think we'll get, you know, a fair amount of points there, and I think we'll win it. I'm going to stick my neck on the line and say we'll win it.
Yeah, if you got that, Steve, we're going to come back to that.
Great stuff. Well, we all certainly hope we do win it, but let's move on to another competition that we're flying in, guys. The Champions League, 4-0 victory over Milan, 7-2 on aggregate. What a terrific night and a fantastic performance. But Dan, Milan, they were a bit off, weren't they? It was a really poor performance from them.
I thought the game was a bit boring. It was a bit of a non-event, really, wasn't it? I mean, as soon as Rooney scored that first goal, I think it was virtually all over then. Milan didn't really show much. Until I was being linked with United, I was pretty disappointed with him. I thought his performance was pretty average, to be honest with you. I know Dov probably watches him a little bit more.
He's even worse than Serie A.
No, I think that ball over, was it from Ronaldinho? And all he had to do, he could have shot first. Sorry, could have just brought it down and knocked it in, but he didn't do anything with it, did he?
I think his position was bad as well. I mean, he sort of moved forward for it, like two. I think it was the one. I'm thinking he moved forward too far. So if he just stayed where he was, then he'd have got his chance. But
he's clearly a good player. But I mean, he played wide right, didn't he, for most of that game as well, which I thought was a bit strange. Ronaldinho was surprisingly kept quiet by Gary Neville. I was a bit worried when Neville was starting the game, but you know, Fergie was right again.
Sorry, Dan. Interestingly enough, we've had an email, James McAllister. I mean, talking about Neville, there would you be tempted to offer him a new deal now? I mean, he's been playing the last few games. He's not looked out of place. I know he wasn't brilliant against Fulham, but he didn't do anything wrong. Made the goal for Rooney. He's earned it, hasn't he?
It depends whether Ferguson thinks we've got adequate players there to fill in at right back. I mean, we've obviously got. We've got Wes Brown, who can play there, but he keeps getting injured, doesn't he? We've got Raphael, another one who gets injured quite regularly, and John O'Shea, who's who's injured currently. So there's only really Gary Neville who can actually play there at the moment. And I think that Ferguson will offer him a one-year deal because he likes to do that, doesn't he? Especially with the older players, the likes of Scholes and Giggs. So I think he will definitely get another contract. But I mean, that's probably one area of the team where I'd like to see us strengthen in the summer, right back, because obviously we've got a world-class left back, and John O'Shea can cover at left back, I think, if anything happens to Evra. But I think on the right hand side, I think we just need a proper world-class right back.
And Dov, just back to the Milan game, another brace for Rooney. Where would he rate in your sort of all-time Manchester United strikers at the moment?
At the minute, he's certainly up there. I mean, talking modern day, like Van Nistelrooy is probably the best modern day striker that we've had. It's not quite there yet, I don't think. I think if he keeps his goal scoring record up for maybe a couple of seasons, like Ronaldo did, then he'd be up there. But at the minute, I would probably say on form he's the best striker in the world. I can't think of any that are better than him right now. He's that good. He's just added so much to his game. His movement's great. And we always complained about his finishing. He didn't score enough goals. And, well, what is it, 32 for United this season? Yeah. On course, like, I think he'll probably get more than what Ronaldo did. Ronaldo scored 40-plus. So I think he's on course to do that. And if he keeps going the way he's going, then I think, Dan, you'll have to admit he is a world-class player.
I think that United have obviously had a lot of good strikers over the years. You know, I think that you've got players like Mark Hughes and Eric Cantona and players like that who, at the moment, are on a higher pedestal than Rooney. I think you've got players like, I don't know, Andy Cole scored a lot of goals for United. Van Nistelrooy, like you say, Solskjaer. There's a lot. Dwight York. There's loads of players you could pick. David Bellion, he was fantastic for us.
I certainly was. Yeah. One of my favourites.
But yeah, no. Going back to Wayne Rooney there, I mean, I did say actually if he scored a few goals against Milan, then I would have to have a rethink.
Dan, I wouldn't give yourself too much thinking about that. I mean, Milan.
Oh, he's on really good form, isn't he? You can't deny that. He's been the one who's spurred us on this season, and he's starting to prove a lot of people wrong, because there's not just me. There's a lot of people that don't think he's as high as what players rate him as, but I mean he's a very good player, and I'm pleased to be proved wrong.
Steve,
not fully yet though.
Steve, what did you like think of David Beckham picking up the green and gold scarf just as he left?
Yeah, I mean it's great to see, isn't it, for the cause. I mean he came out afterwards and sort of mentioned that it wasn't done purposely to show any sort of allegiance. Come on.
That's a load of rubbish, that's yeah. Because come on, he came out saying, "Oh, I follow Man United all the time and all this lot," and then he goes on after the game saying, "Oh, I didn't. It's the old club colours of Newton Heath. That's all I know." Give me a break, David Beckham. You're not fooling me on that one. It would have been nice to see him score that goal though, that volley.
It was a quick shot, wasn't it?
Yeah, I quite liked when he came on and he got a big massive cheer. Then the minute he touched the ball, he got roundly booed.
I think it was all in just a bit of having a laugh at him, but he was nearly in tears when he came on, wasn't he? He was that emotional. Mm. Obviously, he's in a bit of tears now with his Achilles heel. But
Sean Fields emailed in and sort of asked on our opinions on that. It's World Cup driven over for him.
It was really sad. I watched the game last night, and it was one of Milan's better players. Milan were rubbish again, and he was proper. He was in tears, like you could see in his face. He knew the minute it went down that was it. It had gone, and he sort of knew. It was quite sad for him, but I think Roy Keane said today he's played in something like 3 World Cups already, so that's enough. That's enough.
He'll be back, surely.
Well, he's had his operation today, hasn't he? And apparently all went well. But I mean, that must be a painful injury, that. If he just... All he did, he just stepped back, didn't he? To take a kick of the ball, and it just went. Oh, that must be... Well, I don't like that at all.
Yeah, I mean, well, Milan have said he can go back there. I mean, he has the right age and things like that. So, they said they'll have him back next year.
In terms of the World Cup, I think that it's made. I mean, he would probably have got in the 23, wouldn't he? But I think it's made Capello's life a little bit easier now, because he doesn't have to make that decision.
Yeah, I think he would have taken him, like you say, Dan.
I think he would definitely have taken him, but I mean, it's in case players come to a bit more form than what Beckham did towards the end of the season, the likes of Sean Wright-Phillips or or Lennon when he gets back fit, players like that. And Milner, of course, who can, he's very well dealt with playing out there. So I think that it's made his life a little bit easier. He doesn't have to make any controversial decisions in case he doesn't think he should pick him, but it is a big blow.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
At last, the CAF countdown returns this week, and RedCafe.net member Gaffs has been brave enough to step up to the plate. How are you, Gaffs?
Yeah, no, I'm good, thanks, Tony. Cheers.
So, 100 years of Old Trafford at the weekend. What's your best memory?
Best memory at Old Trafford, or...
Yeah, at Old Trafford. Well, any event?
At Old Trafford, I have to say probably semi-final against Barcelona. 2 seasons ago when Scholes scored. I went to the first leg in Barcelona, 0-0 after Ronaldo missed that penalty. Bit nervy about the second leg, but finally to get to that Champions League final was absolutely fantastic, euphoric. And then I went to the final as well a few weeks later in Moscow. But for me, the final was great, but just getting there was even better for me. Seeing Scholes score was great.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was at a game as well, and when Scholes scored, it was pretty emotional as well.
It was just fantastic, you know, because we've seen us get to the semi-final so many times, you know recently against Milan, Leverkusen, Munich, you know, just to see us get there, you know, because I wasn't able to go in 99, I was a bit too young then.
Do you think we'll get there again for the third time in a row?
I think it just depends on that draw, doesn't it? Yeah, I don't know. If we get Chelsea, maybe Bayern Munich. You know, Barca looked fantastic last night. So, I don't know. It's all luck, isn't it, in the quarterfinals and semifinals. It can go your way. You know, and other nights it just doesn't.
Yeah, well,
I'm a bit pessimist, if you haven't noticed.
It's fine, I'm always like that. I get a bit of stick for it as well. But anyway, I'm sure you already know, Fergal tops the table on the CAF countdown with 8 points. He got it in one of the first few weeks we started it. So it's all to play for.
I ain't going to beat that. He was razor sharp, that boy.
Well, you never know. Anyway, you've got 1 minute to answer as many questions as you can, Gaffs. The clock starts now. Name the Holy Trinity.
Law, Charlton, Best.
What was Edwin van der Sar's squad number in 2005?
Number one.
In what year in the 1970s were United relegated to the old second division?
75.
In what year did Rio Ferdinand miss a drug test?
2005.
Who was United's manager during their first European campaign?
Busby.
Which United midfielder scored the goal that clinched promotion back to the old first division back in 1975? When United bought Jaap Stam, he was the costliest defender in the world. True or false?
False.
How many goals has Wayne Rooney scored in all competitions this season?
33.
Right, well, you answered 8 questions. Unfortunately, you only got 2
I think
right.
Good run then for England, didn't he?
Well, I meant club, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, we'll have England or not. I don't know. We'll decide with Steve. Steve's normally a good judge. Anyway, you got the Holy Trinity right. Van der Sar's squad number was 19 in 2005. 1974 was when United were relegated to the second division.
One off then, yeah.
Yeah, Ferdinand missed his drug test in 2003. I was surprised at that. I thought it was a lot later. But yeah, 2003. You got Busby right. Lou Macari was the one who scored the goal that clinched promotion. And Jaap Stam was the costliest defender in the world.
Was he? Okay. Yeah. No, good stuff. No, thanks very much, Danny. I've learned something tonight.
no worries. I always like to be the one teaching people. No, thanks for joining us anyway. It's very good of you. And just unlucky with the scores.
No problem at all. Cheers, mate. Thanks very much.
You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Well, it's Reserves Review now on the RedCafe.net podcast, and Dov's going to bring us up to date with the latest action.
Yes, I am, Steve. It happened last week, and it was a Manchester derby, United against City, at Moss Lane. and it was a 2-2 draw. It was a very, very exciting game as well. And probably man of the match was Ron Robert Zieler, the United goalkeeper, who was inspired, to say the least. The game sort of started, City came out with quite an attacking intent, so really went for the jugular from the off. And it kept Zieler, like, after about 10 minutes, he really kept us in the game with that amazing double save. David Poole had a shot, then a City striker by the name of Nimley, I believe, he sort of came in for the follow-up, and then basically Zieler just sort of flung himself at this ball and parried it behind. So that was an absolutely stunning double save there. And then United took the lead. A couple of minutes later, Oliver Norwood, he sort of curled in a free kick and basically put it right on the head of Reece Brown, who buried the header into the bottom corner. A lovely free kick from about sort of 40 yards out as well from Norwood, and that obviously put United in front. And then on the 27th minute, this was an amazing finish by Will Keane. He scored the goal. Basically, Reece Brown played a long ball up from sort of right back up the right wing, and then sort of inside the City 18-yard box, Diouf ran onto the ball, sort of beat City defender, pulled it back, and sort of the ball was a bit behind where Keane was standing, and he sort of spun round, and that was a lovely backheel finish. It was fantastic, and if you want to see it, go to YouTube. It is there, and it's a fantastic finish. It really, really is. City's reaction after the goal was really, really positive. They got back into the game basically, and they got back into it straight away. In the 33rd minute, a cross came in, and Derek Boyata, his header, Ron Robert-Zieler's crossbar, and then the ball fell to Nimley, who then sort of slotted it into the bottom corner. So it was a bit unlucky, to say the least, but City did deserve a goal. You won't catch me saying that again. It was a bit of a sort of end-to-end game for the remainder of the first half. And then in the second half, I think Richard Delaney, he was taken off injured. He contested a 50-50 ball with Kieran Trippier. The City player got the ball, but Delaney, he stayed down, and it looks like he's going to be out possibly for the rest of the season. He was then replaced by Magnus Ekram. Corey Evans then dropped back in the central defence for United. And basically City decided that, well, they turned the screw. They really sort of pummeled the United back line. And Ron Robert-Zieler, we've got to thank. He palmed out a header from Onahua as well. And Ben Mee, he came in with a follow-up from a corner. And that was turned away by Zieler, and again it was another spectacular save. But with all the pressure, City did get the rewards. City player Toot, I think his name is, he came into the box. Reece Brown went in with a sliding challenge and then sort of clipped his feet with his trailing hand. I think it was a bit harsh, but it was given, and the resulting penalty was scored by Toot as well. So it was 2-2. That was in the 90th minute as well. So it was 2-2 overall. It was probably a fair result. United are in the reserve league. United are 2 points clear to City, who have played a game more than us. And Liverpool are 7 points off United, but they've got 4 games in hand. So obviously, if they win all of them, they could leapfrog us there. But it was an exciting game, and a good performance from a couple of players, especially that Will Keane finish was absolutely fantastic.
Well, Cabbage and Player of the Week time now then, and we'll start with the Player of the Week. And Dan, do I really have to ask you this question, Player of the Week?
I think you do, yeah. I think I'm going to go with Wayne Rooney. Scored 2 goals. Berbatov played very well, but obviously, you've got to be finishing your chances, and Rooney, I mean, I know they were fairly simple goals to score, but I mean, he looked lively throughout the game. And I think he spurred us on, and I think that was one of his best performances, especially against Milan as well. I think that coupled together, I think that Rooney just about nudges it.
You surprised me there, Dan. I thought it was going to be Berbatov hands down for that full
of... I was waiting for that as well, Steve.
Well, there you are. You see, I've outfoxed you both again. What about you, Dobby? Are you going to go for? You're not going to go Berbatov.
I'm not going to go Berbatov, no. You're right. I don't. I'm going to give it to Ji Sung Park for basically not letting Pirlo play against Milan and then coming on and setting up Berbatov's goal at the weekend. I think he's had a great week and fully deserves to start of the weekend. He's my player of the week, this week.
And for me, I'm going to give it to Berbatov. I think he's really deserved it this week. Fulham performance was, I think, his best in a United shirt. I mean, we've talked about it a lot earlier in the show, but there was things that Berbatov did on the weekend that I didn't think he was capable of. I mean, cutting inside and accelerating past two players was amazing, and I didn't think he was capable of that, and he clearly is. Yeah, fantastic from Berbatov, so he's my player of the week. And what about Cabbage of the week then?
It's a tough one, that, because I think everyone played fairly well against Fulham. I think the one player, just because I think it was Valencia. I don't think he had a massive input on the game. I think Fulham defended against him really well. Every time that Valencia seemed to get the ball, there was two or three players around him, and he wasn't able to get, you know, to the byline and cross it in, which I thought was really good by Roy Hodgson, because he's obviously done his homework and realised that we got a lot of goals, you know, through Valencia, and in turn that gave Nani a better chance down the left hand side. So I think not for any fault of his own, but I think Valencia, just because he didn't have much of an impact on the game.
This is a really, really difficult one. It's been a fantastic week. Maybe looking at the Champions League game, I thought Nani wasn't really very good.
Dov, what about that ball for Rooney?
I know it was a really good ball.
Really good, are you kidding? It was amazing.
I actually can't think of anybody else. I was going to give it to Gary Neville, but...
But he got an assist as well.
There's nobody there. I'll give it to Darren Gibson, because the shot he hit against Milan that went, where, I don't even know where it went somewhere else. We'll give it to him for that. Darren Gibbo, we'll give it to him, he can get Cabbage of the Week. What about you, Steve? Who's your Cabbage?
Like you say, it's really difficult. I'm tempted to go with Valencia like Dan, just because he was sort of not the same impact that he has been in recent weeks, but... What about Van der Sar? Had nothing to do. I don't think he's touched the ball hardly, has he, the last couple of games? I mean, made a good save, actually, against Milan from the Beckham volley, and before that as well, I seem to remember him making one decent save. Just because he didn't really have a lot to do, I'm going to give it to Van der Sar. Well, it's preview time on the RedCafe.net podcast, and obviously massive game coming up this weekend. It is, of course, Liverpool at home. And I'm delighted to say that we'll be joined by Goal.com UK's Liverpool correspondent, Neil Jones. Neil, thanks a lot for coming on the show. And obviously, looking ahead to the big one this weekend, you're going into the game with a bit of confidence now. Now you've just smashed Portsmouth.
Well, yeah, a little bit of confidence. Obviously, you have to be taken with a pinch of salt at the Portsmouth. They were very much willing lambs for the slaughter, but certainly a lot more confidence than we've had in recent weeks.
And I suppose as a Liverpool fan, you sort of think, well, we've gone and picked up a decent victory, but now we need to push on. I guess there's been so many times where you've played well, and in the next game, it's just been another disappointment.
That's right. I mean, you only need to look at recent points for the fixture at Anfield with Manchester United. You know, everyone thought that would be a turning point, and the week after they go to Fulham and get beat. So it's been a problem all season, getting a consistent run of form, getting a consistent run of wins and scoring goals.
And just how significant, I mean, put it into words for us, the game on Sunday, how significant is it in relation to your season? Obviously, you're chasing that fourth spot, but beating United at Old Trafford again, as you did so emphatically last season, would that not go some way to sort of appeasing the fans? Because it's been ultimately a disappointing season for you.
I think you need to take it out of the context of Liverpool United for the first thing, just because it's so important for Liverpool to get in the top four, and at the end of the day, I don't think they can afford to lose another game, really. You know, the games in hand, Tottenham and Manchester City and Aston Villa, they really need to be winning games, and, you know, if they were to finish outside the top four, it'd be a huge disappointment. Obviously, you want to get a win at Old Trafford. Liverpool always want to win at Old Trafford, and I wouldn't say it goes the peace, the fans, because obviously there's been, you know, you could win two games all season and not pick up another point. So it's a difficult one to judge, but I think it's a big game in terms of not just the historical context, but also the context of this season.
And Neil, without sort of kicking you while you're down, I mean, has there been times this season where it's been a little bit embarrassing? I mean, you see United, they've just gone and smashed Milan. Obviously, Arsenal and Chelsea, they're still very, very much alive in the title race and in the Champions League as well. And Liverpool, you should really be a part of that, shouldn't you?
Yes. I hear that a fan was quite a good description. He said, when you're playing Unirail Azatani in the Europa League, he said, watching the Champions League this week, he said, it's like watching your kids with another father. You know, he said, you're on the outside looking in, you know that you should be there, but you're not. But at the end of the day, Liverpool got what they deserved. They didn't deserve to be in the Champions League beyond Christmas. And you'd hope that it'd be a spare to make sure that they don't get put in that position again. But as I say, they're looking very risky at the moment.
And Neil, I've noticed you've done a couple of columns for Goal.com UK on this subject. But Steven Gerrard, Fernando Torres, Javier Mascherano, arguably your three best players. I mean, if you don't secure that fourth spot, realistically, they could probably be off, couldn't they?
I think Mascherano more than the other two. I think Mascherano, there's a lot of people speaking, you know, saying that he's going, even probably if Liverpool finish in the top four, which is, you know, that'd be a massive blow, even though there's rumours there's a contract on the table. But it looks like a very similar situation to what Xabi Alonso had, where he just wants to move on. I think Steven Gerrard, it might sound a little bit strange to say because it's Steven Gerrard, but I don't see where he'd go. I don't see a big team such as Barcelona, Real Madrid, I don't see them having any need for him.
No.
I don't see him playing in Italy, and I can't see him staying in the Premier League with another club. So it's hard to see Steven Gerrard leaving, not just on the grounds that he wants to stay at Liverpool, but on the grounds that there's not really many options for him. Fernando Torres, you know, he could walk into any club, I'm sure. You know, you'd have every club in the world ringing up if you put him available for transfer. But I think you'll get at least another season out of Fernando Torres.
And what's your stance on Rafael Benitez now? I seem to remember the last time you came on the show, you were sticking by him, willing to give him time, chance, but is that still the case now?
It's a hard one. You scratch the surface sometimes with some of the things you read about Liverpool. You know, the problems of the club are absolutely, you know, they're absolutely huge. And I think Rafael Benitez has been caught in the middle in a lot of respect. That said, I think he's made a lot of mistakes in terms of just decisions that I think, when you consider how close Liverpool were to winning the league last year, and you know, obviously, you know, from your own experience, that it was a tight one. You know, that people didn't expect Liverpool to be as close, but I think that they really needed to just get the decisions right in the summer. And I don't think in that respect that he did. And then obviously, a snowball effect with injuries, things like that. And he's, you know, we've been sort of fighting against the tide all season. I personally, it pains me to say, but I personally think that it might just be time for a change at Liverpool. You know, hopefully we'll get fourth, and hopefully, you know, if Rafa did stay there, he'd be able to turn things around. But you know, if I was put my hand on my heart, I'd say I'd probably say a change is needed at Liverpool in the long run.
And just finally, Neil, what about a prediction for Sunday? You confident you can go to Old Trafford and pick up a result?
Yeah, 4-1 again. 4-1 again. I think it's we've got another game in midweek against Lille, which is not ideal because, you know, Thursday, Sunday. I know it's the same as Wednesday, Saturday, but it does just seem a little bit like our teams tend to struggle after Europa League games. Certainly, I know Everton have had a few problems with it. And I think Fulham have struggled a little bit as well on the aftermath of big European games. And I think you won't see Liverpool as fluent as they were last night. Certainly, United won't give them the type of time that Portsmouth did. And I think you'll see a more solid, compact team than maybe a more defensive minded. But that said, you know, Manchester United, Liverpool have had the Indian sign over them the last three games, and you know, how long is Vidic going to stay on the pitch this time? We could, I think if you're looking at a draw, maybe a score draw.
Great stuff. Well, Neil, it's been a pleasure. Thanks a lot for coming on the show, and well, good luck for the rest of the season.
No problem at all. Enjoy the game.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Well, that was the views of our opposition fan, Neil Jones from Goal.com UK. Well, guys, let's look ahead to Liverpool game ourselves and discuss how we think it's going to go. But before we do that, just a little note off air. We were just having a chat there, and Dan, we talked about potentially if it ever arose, say Torres looked to leave Liverpool at the end of the season, and for some reason we talked about swapping Rooney for Torres, and Dan was potentially considering it.
Obviously, I'm going to state it right now. I'd love the pair of them up front together. That'd be phenomenal, wouldn't it? Really. But I think if you were to say to me that United were going to put a cheeky $60 million bid in for Torres, and then Liverpool turned around and said, "All right, you can have Torres for $60 million, but you've got to give us Wayne Rooney in exchange." I don't know. There's something about me that I think I'd be tempted. I know that sounds a bit daft and controversial in the form that they're in, but I think Torres would be amazing in our team, even better than what he is at Liverpool. I think that he's obviously Ferguson's liked him before, and I think that'd be phenomenal. But obviously it wouldn't happen. Rooney would never go to Liverpool.
If you had to choose, Dan, right?
If you
had to choose, you've got one more place in your team. You've got Berbatov as your number 9, and your number 10. You can either have Rooney or Torres, not both, just one. Who would you pick?
I think I'd go with Torres. I think.
Oh, damn!
I think he's more proven.
Where?
He did it in Spain, didn't he? I know Rooney's not playing.
Not really.
What do you mean, not really? He scored goals. He
12. The most in a season he scored was 12.
Yeah, but he was a young boy over there, wasn't he? And now he's not mature. He's a mature man. And I tell you what, I reckon he would score. He would score double what Rooney would score at United.
I mean, I'm with you, Dan, on the fact that Torres is a world-class player, but just Rooney's passion for United and just his love for the club, and you can just see it when he's playing, and he just gives his all for the club. And Torres, you can't really guarantee that week in, week out, he's going to be up for it, whereas Rooney, even if he's on an off day, he's still 110%.
I just work on the basis that I think that if you gave Torres one chance in a game, yeah, last minute, 9 times out of 10, I reckon he'd smash it in the net. I'm not convinced Rooney would in a big, massive.
I think Rooney may do it now.
I think that Torres is more—he's more of a natural, instinctive type of player in terms of finishing. Obviously, Rooney's a lot better at build-up play and things like that. But I think that Torres, on a pure striking level, I think he's better than Rooney. I mean, Steve, you mentioned about Rooney loving the club and everything else, but I mean, Every player says that, I love the club and all this, and it's I do tend to believe it with Rooney, because I think he does love playing for United. But I mean, look at Jamie Carragher over Liverpool. I mean, it's a few years ago he was saying he's Mr. Liverpool and all this lot, and now he's coming out saying, well, if they don't offer me a contract, I'm not bothered about if I leave. And I think that there's a lot of things like that go on in players' minds, and I think that I think you're just being a bit naive to say that that Rooney will want to stay there forever, because a lot of players say that, don't they?
And just looking ahead to the game, guys, what about a prediction? Your predictions were a bit, they went a bit wrong last season, didn't they? So, going to be similar?
I was hoping he wouldn't bring it up, Dan, but he did.
He has brought it up, yeah. He made us look fools last year. But I think this year, a different story. I think Liverpool last season had a lot to play for, didn't they? They were going for the title, weren't they, and everything else. And they thought they'd won it, I think, when they beat us, which was kind of a blessing, really. It made us sit up and start playing again. But I think this season, I think we'll be too strong for them. Obviously, with the exception of Torres, I think that they don't offer a lot, really. And I think I'm going to go 2-1, I think.
I think I'll be pretty close as well, to be honest. I'm not going to go on a limb and say it's going to be a 4-0 drop-in or something like that. But I think he'll go with 5 in midfield again. I think he'll look to win the midfield battle, even though we're playing at home, have Rooney up front on his own. And then I don't think they'll score. They don't look like they've got much of an attacking threat. I know Torres is there, but I mean, there's no service to him, so I think it might only be 1-0, something like that. I think it'll be a really tense game as well.
Great stuff. Well, that is just about the end of the redcafe.net podcast for this week. Do email us on the normal address, which is podcast@redcafe.net, and make sure you join the Facebook group too. I think we've got just over 400 members now on there, so Great stuff. We really appreciate all your support on there. If you haven't joined already, then make sure you go ahead and do that. That just leaves us to say thanks a lot for listening this week, and tune in again next week.